Okay, so during the past couple of years, we've been looking at offender-level impacts of SB 133, trying to assess to what extent the passage of this law can be linked to changes in behavior for offenders going through SB 133, and to what extent those changes in behavior are of greater value to the state of Kansas compared to what other drug possessors are getting in the state, either because they're going to prison or because they're going through standard community corrections or court services. So today we're going to be talking mostly about recidivism, looking at the effect of SB 123 on reconviction and revocation rates for SB 123 offenders, but also comparing those rates to similar offenders going through alternative sanctions, again, mostly court services, prison, or standard community corrections. Now, a separate question is about the content of treatment, and we're at this point trying to work with the administrative data produced by the Department of Corrections to look at what predicts success within SB 123, what combinations of treatment modalities are related to lower recidivism rates. We're also trying to expand on the list of outcomes to move beyond criminal recidivism to look at other aspects of offender performance that can be linked to participation in SB 123 in terms of compliance with treatment, but also in terms of risk levels and addiction scores. So again, for the most part today, we're going to be talking about recidivism. So the sort of the first set of questions have to do with offending and failure while on community supervision. So for the most part, what we're trying to do again is comparing SB 123 to the alternative sanctions that were available to the state of Kansas prior to the implementation of SB 133 and after implementation of SB 123, because as Don pointed out, we have a substantial number of drug offenders that are still being sentenced to court services or standard community corrections or court services. So we also, again, have a set of questions about other outcomes related to SB 133, and that's preliminary work. We can talk about that work in the Q&A. So just to reiterate here, we are looking at SB 123 eligible offenders. So that's offenders who have been convicted of first or second simple drug possession, who have non-person offenses, so criminal history scores E through I. We're looking at about 5,000 of those individuals convicted of drug possession and sentenced to SB 123 between implementation in November of 2003 through November of 2008. And we are looking at outcomes of a comparison group that we constructed, looking at also low-level drug possessors who were sentenced to prison, community corrections, and court services, both prior to implementation of SB 123 and then after implementation. The way we look at recidivism, we measure recidivism by looking at two outcomes: reconviction for a new offense and revocation from supervision. For both of these outcomes, our sort of our complete report looks at failures that are linked to a new prison stay and a more general measure of failure that does not include a prison stay. So, for example, you can be convicted of a new offense but be reinstated to community-based supervision. So here we're going to be looking only at failures from supervision that are linked to a prison stay, because those are the ones that have the most direct impact on the prison system in Kansas. We looked at failures at different thresholds. Today I will be talking mostly about failures at 24 months of exposure in the community, but we also have available rates at 12 and 18 months. So these are the recidivism rates by group. The darker blue shows the recidivism rates at 12 months of risk exposure, and the lighter blue at 24 months. So we see that about a third of drug possessors sentenced to prison fail within 24 months. That's closely followed by community corrections folks, and then by folks sentenced to SB 123. Again, this is at 24 months. And just to reiterate, we're looking at SB 123 eligible drug offenders. So we're looking at offenders who have a relatively minor criminal history score, and all of them have been convicted, obviously, of simple drug possession. So this is what we're trying to predict, the variation in the rate of failure across these groups. So the first set of analysis, we run a set of logistic regressions, just creating a set of dummies for participation. So we'll just be interested in associating participation in core services, SB 123, or prison, with that variation in the likelihood of failure. Then we also implemented a set of models looking at the time to failure, trying to predict whether SB 123 clients would fail at a faster rate than other drug possessors sentenced to an alternative sanction. One important challenge with this set of models is that they do not control for selection. The fact that drug offenders, low-level drug offenders sentenced to prison may still be different from drug offenders sentenced to court services or drug offenders sentenced to a community-based program, even though we are looking at low-level drug possessors. So in order to control for that selection process, in order to model that selection process, we implemented a relatively new approach that seeks to reproduce, follows a quasi-experimental design. So we try to reproduce the likelihood of individual offenders to receive an SB 123 offense, an SB 123 sentence. So by doing that, we will be sort of matching offenders who eventually went to SB 123 with those who went to an alternative sanction, and then looking at their outcomes. So it's a procedure by which you realign the sample in order to make the elements in that sample be at least statistically equivalent to one another. So I will be talking about that in a second. So this this table presents the summary results for our logistic regression, that is our analysis looking at unmatched samples. Now, the coefficients in this table represent the likelihood of failure associated with each of the alternative sanctions compared to SB 123. We also split the results by cohort, thinking that during the first 2 years of program implementation, we would not be able to observe the full impact of the program. So we split the sample into two different cohorts, the first cohort of SB 123 offenders, those sentenced to SB 123 between November of 2003 and November of 2005, so giving the program 2 years to realign treatment and supervision practices. And then after those 2 years, so from 2005 to 2008, is our second SB 123 cohort. So again, the bars represent the change in the likelihood of failing. And here we're looking at reconviction and revocation. So for the first SB 123 cohort, participation in SB 123 is related to a negative change in the likelihood of failing when SB 123 is compared to to community corrections. So offenders going through SB 123 are 36% less likely to fail than drug offenders sentenced to community corrections. Now, compared to court services, we find a significant effect by which participation in SB 123 for that first cohort increases the likelihood of failure by about a third, so 36%. Now, when looking again at this at the second cohort, so allowing the program to align services, allowing the staff of the Cancer Sentencing Commission and the DOC to disseminate practices associated with the new program, then we see that there is no significant relationship between No significant difference between those who participate in SB 123 in that second cohort and those going through court services. So we find a significant effect of SB 123 compared to community corrections and compared to prison. And by that we mean that offenders going through SB 123 are less likely to fail than those going through community corrections and prison. Again, more specifically for that second cohort. This is looking at logistic regression models with unmatched samples. So at this point, we're not controlling for the selection process in the sample, but we are just looking at drug offenders sentence of simple drug possession with low-level criminal history scores. Our main interest was to look at the effect of program participation, so whether offenders going through SB 123 perform better than offenders going through a different community-based or prison-based program. But we also had a series of covariates of recidivism. Some of these have been identified in the literature, also associated with recidivism while in community supervision. A couple of them were interesting. First, the importance of context. So this relationship between the county of conviction and the likelihood of offenders failing in the community. So on the one hand, offenders who were residing in more urban locations were more likely to fail, according to these models, which is sort of an interesting finding because in urban areas, you will think that there will be a greater number of treatment providers, but also there is more supervision. So it's important to think that a number of patterns that we've detected here are linked mostly to revocation procedures that are linked to failures rather than new offending. Now, the other important pattern that is crucial is the performance of the offenders that we aggregated in that second cohort. So those offenders participating in SB 123 starting in November of 2005 were performing better in terms of recidivism rates compared to SB 123 offenders who went through the program earlier. So here we, as I said earlier, one problem with the analysis had that the problem was that we didn't control for the selection process. The fact that not all simple drug possessors with low criminal histories have the same chance of being selected into SB 123, although the program is supposed to be mandatory. Some of them will have a greater likelihood of being sentenced to SB 123. So we first tried to model that selection process in order to reconfigure the sample to make the cases be similar to one another. So in order to reconfigure the sample, we fit a Probit model that first estimates the likelihood of receiving an SB 123 sentence, and then with that match sample, we estimate recidivism rates and then compare those recidivism rates in the match sample to assess the treatment effect, in this case, the effect of participating on SB 123 compared to court services and community corrections. So what we found is that SB 123 increases the likelihood of recidivism at 12 and 24 months compared to court services. And again, here we're matching samples. I can get into the details on how we did that. We tried different matching algorithms and results were robust to the matching procedure, which is something that it's kind of a weak point of the propensity score matching, is that findings are usually sensitive to the different procedures. So we tried different algorithms, and we found basically the same results. We also found that there was no impact of SB 123 on recidivism rates compared to community corrections. So individuals going through SB 123 did not better than equivalent offenders going through community corrections. And here is a table summarizing the results. The 24-month follow-up for the first two rows for court services, the last two rows for community corrections. So you will notice sort of the unmatched sample is the raw sample, the way we get it. And you see the recidivism rate, so 22.7% for SB 123, 16% for core services in the unmatched sample. Then once we realign those cases in order to make them equivalent, then we reduce the sample to about 660 cases, and then we compare recidivism outcomes for both offenders going through SB 123 and offenders going through either court services and community corrections. So this table shows that individuals going through core services, other things being equal, have a lower rate of recidivism compared to those going through SB 123. We'll take questions later, but
sure. Recidivism,
we use two different measures. These tables here combine reconviction and revocation, leading to a prison stay for any offense, yes. So reconviction for a new offense and revocation for technical violation. A revocation due to a new offense, we count it as a reconviction. Here we're combining them. But again, most of these is operating through the revocation failure, and we can talk about it in the Q&A. And results at 12 months were relatively similar, although sort of the difference in the coefficient for the average treatment effect was larger when looking at 24 months. So we also looked at time to failure and trying to estimate the speed at which offenders going through SB 123 and going through other sentencing alternatives were failing in the community. And here the models we're presenting are 24-month threshold, and we found, again, that participation in SB 123 delays time to failure relative to community corrections and relative to court services, related to prison, but accelerates that time to failure when compared to court services. So offenders going through court services take longer time to fail using unmatched samples, but also fail less than those going through SB 123 when we looked at the propensity score matching and the samples of equivalent offenders. So, and sort of this is the survival curve. So here we look at the number, the fraction of offenders who remain free in the community and the sort of the or horizontal axis has the time to failure in days, and we see that you don't see really the colors. The blue line, sort of the second line, is the from top to bottom is the line for SB 123 offenders. So the first line, the green line, is core services. So a greater fraction of those individuals remain in the community, survive in the community, to use the terminology that linked to this methodology, and then offenders in the other three groups. So again, offenders going through SB 123 fail faster than a greater fraction of them fail faster than those going through core services. So what are the implications of our findings at the offender level? So SB 123 has a slightly greater impact on revocations than and reconvictions. So when we look at unmatched samples, not controlling for the selection process, we find a positive effect of SB 123. The problem is that once we control for the selection process, then impact of SB 123 is really produced by differences in the characteristics of the sample and the attributes of offenders going through core services versus the attributes of offenders going through other alternatives. We found again that later cohorts of SB123 do better than earlier cohorts, which is important from an implementation point of view, and it's important in terms of the timing of additional reforms to SB123. And again, we found that compared to community corrections, to standard community corrections and prison, offenders going through SB123 do better than offenders going through those programs, but they don't do better than those going through core services, mostly because individuals in core services are not revoked as much, or when they're revoked, they're moved from core services to community corrections. So there is an increase in the sort of the level of supervision, but not necessarily they are going straight to prison from core services. So that's an important difference to keep in mind. So what we learned in terms of the system level impacts, as Don mentioned earlier, is that SB123 has effectively reduced the use of prison in different ways. First, the most direct and straightforward impact is by reducing the number of drug possessors sentenced to prison. As a mandatory program, again, we have more than 70% of simple drug possessors going now to SB123 instead of going to prison. But also, the use of prison has been averted by a reduction in the number of people who received that SB123 sentence and were then revoked and sent back to the community, because we have fewer failures in the community than we have decreased use in the use of prison, mostly through revocations. So we see fewer technical violations being handled in terms of sending the offender back to prison, and also through reconvictions, although in a smaller number. Thinking about sort of the overall cost of housing offenders in state prisons, and working with the staff of the Sentencing Commission, we estimated the cost of the cost avoidance of SB123 to about $30 million, and we can again go over the details of that analysis in the Q&A. But again, we have fewer bodies in prison linked to simple drug possession. Again, not only at the sentencing stage, but also in terms of the handling of technical violations. From our process evaluation, where we spend a significant number of time and significant time in Kansas interviewing community corrections officers and interviewing providers, both providers and officers indicated that they were comfortable and they were addressing the needs of the offenders by having team meetings, by spending more time with the offenders. We see some of that not only because they are telling us that that's what's going on, but also in terms of the administrative data recorded on the case management information system. Also in terms of how SB123 connects to a broader set of corrections reforms that are taking place in Kansas, and I think that, Roger, it would be great to hear a little bit about that in your sort of your follow-up intervention in terms of how, for example, the handling of revocations has something to do with SB123, but also has something to do with the handling of revocations at large in the Department of Corrections, and how probation officers, but also parole officers, are now trained to look at failures and to look at supervision processes from a different point of view by using the LSIR, by working closely with community-based organizations. So it's not only about SB123, but it's also about a broader initiative in Kansas about on risk reduction and public safety. We see some net widening taking place in terms of individuals who were sentenced initially to low levels of supervision and low levels or no treatment at all under core services that are now being funneled through SB 123 with higher levels of supervision and higher levels of treatment. So by that, we have a greater share of the population under state supervision, some of that linked to greater levels of failure, again, linked to higher revocation rates. Again, as Roger pointed out, there is more information on the sort of the Kansas Sentencing Commission website, and we have a preliminary report posted on the website, and please do not hesitate to contact us for additional information. Thank you.